Hi, ich freue mich riesig, dass du reinhörst. Ich bin die Nadja und ich nehme dich in meinem Podcast in meine Welt als Yoga-Lehrerin, Mama eines kleinen Sohnes und als Doula, also als Geburtsbegleiterin mit. Ich wünsche dir jetzt ganz, ganz viel Spaß mit dieser Folge. Ja, in dieser Folge geht's um Schwangerschaft, Schwangerschaftshormone und den Start in die Mutterschaft. Aber nicht aus der Perspektive, wie ich das sonst als mache, sondern wir gucken durch eine ganz andere Brille. Und zwar durch die Brille von Lisa Falco. Lisa ist Wissenschaftlerin, die sich auf Daten und den weiblichen Körper spezialisiert hat. Also sie guckt anhand von Daten, wie sich Hormone im weiblichen Körper verhalten und was sie da bezwecken und verursachen. Und genau, Lisa hat früher in der Schweiz gearbeitet bei AVA, also diesem Startup, das den Zyklus getrackt hat. Und da hat sie ganz, ganz viel Daten zu Gesicht bekommen, die sie dann auch in ihrem Buch jetzt verwertet hat. Und genauer Spoiler, Lisa hat ein Buch geschrieben über den weiblichen Körper und die Hormone. Und das Buch, das klingt meistens so trocken, aber das Buch ist so große Klasse. Ich war so begeistert, dass ich eben Lisa dann gleich angefragt habe für diese Podcast-Folge. Das Buch heißt Go Figure, The Astonishing Science of the Female Body. Und sie erklärt da wirklich, um was oder wie der weibliche Körper funktioniert und geht da sehr spezifisch auf die Hormone ein. Sie bespricht, wie sich der Körper eines Kindes dann zur Teenagerin wandelt, was in der Pubertät passiert, dann einfach, wie wir als zyklische Frauen funktionieren, wie der weibliche Zyklus funktioniert, dann aber auch, wie die Schwangerschaft hormonell verändert wird, wie wir nach der Geburt nochmal eine ganz große Veränderung durchlaufen, warum dann zum Beispiel das Gehirn von Müttern nochmal anders ist, wie das Gehirn von Frauen, die noch nicht geboren haben. Und schlussendlich spricht sie ja noch über Menopause. Ich habe Lisa jetzt aber spezifisch zum Thema Schwangerschaft interviewt, weil, das mein Kerngebiet ist. Wir sprechen in diesem Gespräch auf Englisch darüber, wie die Schwangerschaft den Körper verändert, was da genau passiert. Wir sprechen darüber, welche Rolle die Plazenta spielt, warum unsere Kinder eigentlich die Bosse über die Schwangerschaft sind und nicht unser eigener Körper. Wir sprechen darüber, warum es normal ist, dass wir im Wochenbett 100-mal ins Kinderzimmer laufen, um zu gucken, ob unsere Kinder noch atmen, und warum Männer theoretisch auch stillen könnten. Es wird also wirklich spannend. Ich habe mich riesig gefreut, dieses Gespräch zu führen und ich wünsche dir jetzt ganz viel Spaß mit dieser Folge.
Hi Lisa, and thank you so much for being here and talking about your amazing book. I already told you that I got it as a Christmas present, and I was really amazed how like precise you describe what's going on in our female bodies. It's really, really nice.
Thank you.
Do you want to introduce yourself so that people can understand who you are and why you know so much about the female body?
Yes, sure. So, my name is Lisa Falco. I have a very long experience in working with data, especially data about the body in some form. I've been working, if you include also my PhD, that I made now almost 20 years ago. I've always been working in the interface between data and medicine and how you can use data to better understand the body. Then in 2015, I joined this Swiss startup called Ava Women. I was the first employee to sign there at Ava, and I built up the data science team. And our work there was really about measuring the impact that the hormones had on the body. So we didn't measure the hormones themselves, but we were looking at how the hormones changes the physiology, the heart rate, the breathing rate, the temperature of the body. And then we correlated that to the menstrual cycle. And I thought that was so fascinating that you can actually measure the impact, that is so big that you can actually measure it on the outside. Because yes, of course, I knew there were hormones, I knew all this, but I didn't realize how much impact they had. And we also did a lot of research on pregnancy and on menopause. And I always found myself researching this much deeper than was actually required for my job. And then after 4 years at Ava, it grew really big. The company was a good moment for me to move on. My team has gotten really big, and yeah, I didn't want to stay anymore, actually. So I decided to leave, and I was just wanted to spend more time digging into all these mechanisms of the body. And I also, during my time at Ava, since it was a startup, I had to help a little bit everywhere. I had to help in the customer support. Mm-hmm. I had to help in answering in the Facebook groups and things like this in the very beginning. And I was struck by how little women know mm-hmm. about their bodies. Of course, there were these super users that knew everything, but the big masses knew very little about it. And there are so many things that if you just have the right knowledge, first of all, it can help you a lot with your fertility, that you don't make the wrong decision with regards to that. But it's also so much that many women feel that they're not normal, that they are strange, mm-hmm. when it's just a natural reaction of the changing hormones that we're having. And I really felt that there was a need to understand this a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of knowledge. We often talk about how little research is done on women. And yes, it is true. We definitely need more research. I'm not questioning that. But there's a lot of things that has been done that never has been explained in a way that you really understand it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is complex. But just because it's complex doesn't mean that you can't understand it as a normal woman. If it's just explained in a nice to digest way, it really allows you to get all this medical knowledge. You don't have to study medicine mm-hmm. To understand it. You do have to study medicine or like me working in research for a long time to be able to read those horrible papers. I mean, I say they're horrible because the way they are written has this lingo. Yeah. And if it's something I learned is to understand that lingo, and I really wanted to translate that into a way that normal people can understand it and put it in perspective. Mm-hmm. Because very often either you get it from the medical papers and it's too complicated, or the media takes it and they simplify the message.
Yeah.
They say, oh, this is, if you take this hormone, you'll be depressed for forever. Or if you drink one glass of wine, you'll die in breast cancer. Yeah. You know, it's never very nuanced.
Yeah.
And the reality is much more nuanced than that. And that's really something I wanted to bring to the large public as well. So yeah, that was the motivation to do it. And then of course I didn't know everything. It was not things that I took out of my brain and just put on paper. I spent a lot of time researching. I've in my paper, I've actually always gone back to the original source. So I have over 700 references in the book that I spent a lot of time studying as well. And
How long did it take to write the book, or like including the research you did for it?
So I spent like 7 months full time. And I didn't, 7 months full time researching and writing the first draft.
Yeah.
And then, of course, once I had the first draft, I had already rewritten every chapter about 3 times. And then it was time to confront with other people, with people who could help me with the language, if it was understandable, I also got feedback from all my doctor friends to make sure that I'm not spreading the wrong information that is trustworthy. And that took really long time, actually. That took over a year to gather all the feedback and to rewrite it again. So in all, before, I think publishing it, it took at least 2 years.
Wow.
Until I was ready to publish.
But I can tell that it was worth it. I found it really, like, I think in the first chapter on the first pages, you say something like, in this book, you will hear, and then you use some dots like that cells of your baby will stay within you, like for the rest of your life and stuff like this. So you get really like hungry to read the rest.
Cool. I'm glad to hear that.
That was really nice. I was really like hooked. And now you are still working in that field?
I'm still working with data and artificial intelligence. Okay. But I now switched to being a consultant because I've been so long in different startups and I felt I wanted, you know, one stable base. And then my hope is to, you know, to be able to work with it, but rather on a consultant basis.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But today I can ask you some questions especially about pregnancy, right?
Absolutely.
So in another podcast episode, I was talking to another person and she explained like the female cycle pretty much in detail. I mean, not so deep probably as you can go, but people might have an overview already. But I would be really interested in hearing from you how the body changes on a hormonal level when you get pregnant. Could you give us like an overview what changes and which like hormones are relevant?
Yeah, of course. So what's really fascinating with pregnancy is because you get another organ, you kind of grow another organ inside your body, and that is the placenta. And what's fascinating with this is that it's not really your organ, it's the organ of the fetus. And the placenta is sending out all these hormones in order to change our body. That's how the fetus can control that it gets enough nutrition, that everything it needs to survive, basically. It comes through the placenta. And for the female body to provide the fetus with all this, it needs to make a lot of changes. And the communication channels are the hormones. So it releases a lot of progesterone. Mm-hmm. Progesterone, the name progesterone it actually means pro gestation. So it's really something that is promoting the pregnancy itself. We have progesterone during the menstrual cycle as well, but during the pregnancy, these are actually, I don't know how many multiples, you know, 10 or 100 times higher. So it's a completely different level than during the menstrual cycle. And then another hormone that is also releasing is estrogen. Mm-hmm. Also here, the same multiples so much more than during just a menstrual cycle as well. And these are the ones that are triggering the major changes. There are other hormones as well, like relaxin and lactin, for instance, that is preparing you for the breastfeeding and for relaxing the joints in the body. But it's progesterone and estrogen that are really creating the huge changes that you see. So the estrogen is a hormone that generally promotes cell growth. And what it does is, you know, it grows your uterus, it grows your breast. And it also maybe helps you to collect a bit more fat on the body as well during this period. Then you have the progesterone. This serves at relaxing the smooth muscles in the body. So it allows you to grow when the uterus like to take more and more space. And it also prevents, it plays a really important role in preventing the uterus from starting to contracting.
Okay.
It needs to be relaxed and not inflamed. So what creates the contractions are actually a kind of an inflammation. It's prostaglandins that comes at the end of the pregnancy. And the progesterone always fights against those prostaglandins. So that allows you to have the pregnancy that it lasts really over the 9 months. And you see that a couple of weeks before you give birth, the progesterone starts dropping.
Okay.
And that is necessary for the contraction to be able to start. Then, yeah, they have this huge impact on our body and the vascular system. But it also, of course, influences our brain and our mood. If you see a bit how they...
Better?
It's very individual. So you react a bit differently. And it's probably slightly linked to how you are during the menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I'm someone who gets super happy when I'm in my high estrogen phases.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me very happy during the pregnancy, because I had a lot of estrogen, and estrogen stimulates the happiness hormone serotonin, so you feel happy. But then you also have a lot of progesterone, and some people can react a little badly to the progesterone. So if you're rather someone who reacts badly to progesterone, then you might not be so happy.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So it can really go in both ways, but all those hormones, it can also make things a bit more extreme. So you can also go higher from, you know, from the jumps between being very happy and very unhappy. So
yeah, the so-called mood swings, right?
Okay. Exactly. Yeah, it's really a little bit with this balance. And I think it's really important to remember that we are also different. And even one pregnancy from the other can be a completely different experience as well.
Totally.
Yeah. And you're also under different, the stress hormone, cortisol, has a very big impact on how the other hormones act. So depending on your situation, you will have more or less cortisol.
Mm-hmm.
And that can also influence how happy you feel and how great.
I mean, you hear all the time that stress during pregnancy is really bad for you. Can you, like, do you know if that's really true, or can you, like, measure that?
I'm not sure it's really, you know, it's really bad. Of course, it will make you feel unhappier.
Sure.
And I mean, that is bad.
Yeah.
But I have not seen any indication that it would harm the baby. Mm-hmm. Or... So in that sense, I wouldn't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Because then you probably induce even more stress, right? If you start worrying about being stressed.
Yeah.
So I think it's more about how you feel yourself.
Yeah.
And also, for instance, if you have a lot of... I can come to that later, because let me tell you that now, because you have all these positive effects of the hormones, right, during the pregnancy. But then at the very end of the pregnancy, all those hormones suddenly just drop.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the placenta is gone, you don't have this organ anymore that is producing all the, mm-hmm. the hormones. And and then you don't have the happiness hormones. And this is what causes the baby blues, because they're just from one moment to the next, they're mm-hmm. gone. And that's really harsh.
So
this baby blues is almost inevitable. More than 80% of all women get it. And it's completely normal. It's not much you can actually do about it.
Yeah.
And if you are stressed, then this additionally kind of eats up the serotonin as well. I describe this a bit more in detail in my book, exactly what's happening. But you almost need to read it to grasp it. It's a bit hard to explain otherwise. But this stress can really make the baby blues worse, because it keeps eating the happiness hormones, and then it takes longer to recover. And this can also then be the continuation to postpartum depression. But there are many reasons for postpartum depression. This is not only hormonal. It can be, it can also be linked to how the receptors in the brain are working. So it can be those reactions, but it can also be that you're in a very stressful situation. Again, the cortisol. So it's kind of at that point in time, I think it's really important that you get away and try not to be stressed, or you that you get enough support.
Yes.
From your surrounding.
As a birth doula, I also see that, I mean, obviously it has to do with the hormones, or it can have like it's a possible it's possible that it has something to do with the hormones, but also when the women do have or don't have enough support, or just like a huge identity crisis that can like trigger somehow a depression, I feel.
Mm-hmm. But that is, yeah, I think this is a trigger, but that trigger is actually, I mean, it's the outside events.
Yeah.
And that triggers cortisol, which is a hormone as well, right? So it kind of, and then it influences all the other hormones.
Yeah.
So it is very linked, and there's a very scientific explanation, which is the hormones, but it's all triggered by how we perceive our surrounding.
Yeah.
And if you don't get support, it's terribly stressful.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult moment. I think this transition to becoming a mom, it's not easy for anyone.
I know that's for sure like the biggest changes in my life. Yeah. That's really tough. But you said like the placenta is actually an organ from the baby.
Yeah.
But it releases hormones for you, like as or for the female body. So it's kind of a hijacking.
Yeah, exactly. It is really like a takeover, a hijacking of the body. Yeah. And it uses the hormones to control us.
Wow.
Basically, it's a crazy thought. So
it's a crazy thought. And also it's really impressive. It's really like our body, or like our baby's body that hasn't been born yet, is like super intelligent.
Exactly. Yeah. It already knows how to manipulate us from the very start.
From the very beginning.
And I can tell you, my kids are 11 and 13, and they keep on doing it. So
But it's good to have to see where that comes from, like that there is some biology behind it.
yeah, and also some interesting things, like there are some cells of the fetus that actually get transferred to us. And they've shown like years afterwards that mothers still carry some cells of their children inside of them. So when you say that, you know, oh, as a mom, you always carry your children inside of you, it sounds a bit hippy-dippy, but it's actually true.
Wow. Do you know, is it also true for like the other way around? Do the kids carry mother cells inside them?
It's a good question.
I think I heard that somewhere. Like, I'm not a researcher, so I have no, I cannot make a reference, but I think I read it somewhere that also we carry like our mother's cells within us.
It would make a lot of sense. I mean, if they can go in one direction, I mean, it's... Why not? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I never read about it, but that doesn't mean that it isn't true.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, that's quite cool. And then also, I mean, the fetus, what's really important for the baby is that it's also being taken care of once it's out.
Yeah.
And it also has a strategy for that. So those hormones actually causes anatomical changes in the brain.
Oh, wow.
So they've shown with medical imaging of the mother's brains that the areas in the brain that are active in nurturing, that this grows during the pregnancy, and these changes remain for a long time. And also the areas of risk, where you evaluate how high the risk something is, also grows a lot. And I don't know, it's maybe not true for all mothers, but I remember when I got my first child, I got terrified of everything. I used to be, I don't want to say super brave, but I honestly was not scared of many things. Yeah. I rather consider myself rather cool and chill with regards to risk.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I just panicked on my first time. I should go on a walk with a stroller. We were living on a hill, and I was so afraid that I would let go of the stroller And I totally panicked and I started to cry and I have to go back in. And my husband needed to create like a rope that I could wear around my wrist. Otherwise, I didn't dare to take a step.
Yeah.
And I felt at that moment, I thought, oh, I'm crazy, I'm stupid, you know. But actually, my brain had gone through these changes that the risk center was just overly active because of all the hormones. And that remains well. And it's a good strategy of the fetus, because if you look at the evolution, of course, the women that had those changes, their children had a higher chance of survival out in the wild.
Sure.
It might be a bit exaggerated nowadays, but from an evolutionary perspective, mm-hmm. it makes a lot of sense, right? It
makes a lot of sense. But also, I feel this is really important for new moms to know, because I had the same, like, I mean, I think every mom goes and checks if their kid is breathing. I mean, I did that like 100 times, yeah. Entering the room and checking if my baby is still alive, even though I knew I'm crazy. Like, why should I go? But I couldn't resist. Like, I had to go. And I think it would help a lot of women just to know that this is kind of normal and they're not crazy. It's like something is really going on in their heads and it's like, okay, and it will change again, right?
Exactly. It really goes back to normal after a while. And I think you should just, you know, yeah, accept it as a part of nature. And don't, yeah. Why do you even have to suppress it? I mean, if it's so natural for us to do that.
Yeah. Just a mom instinct.
Exactly.
Wow.
But what's nice, I think, also talking about mom instincts, something that I learned that I think is really important as well is that you don't necessarily, I mean, this love that you feel for your child is not something that comes automatically mm-hmm. either. It's hormonal as well. And it comes when you start caring for your baby. And the more you care for the baby, the more you trigger this bonding hormone, such as oxytocin and dopamine. And the more you care for it, the more of these hormones you'll get and the more the love will evolve. And that also makes it possible for women that are not the biological mothers to develop just a strong bond mm-hmm. as the biological moms, and also for the fathers.
Yes.
The fathers get the same hormonal changes. The more they care for their baby, the more they will love it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably also important, I think, to remember. You know, in the beginning, I think many women get scared because not all of them feel the love towards a child, but it's a complete foreign being. You've never seen this thing before.
Yes.
It's just
the little vampire that hijacked you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And just, you know, massacred you while going out. And, you know, it's not that easy. But if you can make yourself just care for it,
mm-hmm.
you know, just take care of it, then the love will grow as a natural process of that. So
mm-hmm. I think that this is super important to know. Also, like, sometimes I can see that within families that, like, the toddler kid is just like, I don't know, if the kid hurt himself, then it would just go to the mom. And like, I observed a family doing this, and the mom said, like, to her husband, like, can you please take care of him? And he was like, no, but he wants you. And this is something I see all the time, but kids want their mom because their mom always takes care of them, and their dads, or maybe not so much around, like, especially here in Switzerland, they cannot be around because they don't get, like, we just don't have a functional family system here. So mm-hmm. when moms take care of their kids, they develop a really strong bond, but the dad could do that as well.
Yeah, it actually, you don't need to be the biological mom at all to do that. It's a function of time. It's very fair. The more time you spend with a baby, the more it's very fair in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not exclusive. Yeah.
What I also found really interesting, you wrote somewhere that the dad could also breastfeed if given the right hormones. Is that true? Like, how does that function?
Well, you have to artificially give them the hormones. I mean, but the changes that you have, they are, I mean, the estrogen makes the breast grow.
Yeah.
And then the lactin is creating the milk. So if you would give men estrogen and lactin that we get naturally, then they're actually been shown that they can breastfeed, you know. But yeah, it's manipulating a lot, but you can manipulate. I mean, it's crazy what you can change with those. And you also, like, if you change gender, I mean, this is all being done,
yeah,
by giving people hormones. And then you change the estrogen, for instance. It makes your fat go rather on the hips than on the belly. Makes you grow breasts. It also makes your skin smoother. If you take testosterone, if you have more testosterone, you also see it in women, for instance, with PCOS. They have more androgens.
Yes.
And that can then make them grow more hair in the face. And it's all linked to the hormones.
Do you know, is there a difference for pregnant women if they're pregnant with boys or girls? Is the impact on our body different?
That's a good question. I haven't researched it really. I mean, there are no, I should have looked at that. Because I remember they said, you know, when you have this, in Swedish it's called the boy's string, yeah. Like from the belly down. I never checked it. You had it?
I had a boy, I had it, but I think you can have it when you have a girl, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think I maybe checked it and saw that it, you could not really tell.
Yeah.
If you really looked on a larger population, that you couldn't see the difference, but I can't swear on it. I can't remember.
I think, I heard many myths about, like, how a belly should look when you're pregnant with a girl and a boy. And I think it's really, those are myths, right?
Yeah, that's myth. That's, I'm sure. But if there's something else, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe like when you have a boy, then... You said that we carry our baby cells within mm-hmm. us, even though we are not pregnant anymore. And so it might be male DNA in your body, right?
Absolutely. That's actually been easier to show. So it's easier to show that you have cells of your babies when it's a boy, because you find the Y chromosomes inside the cells, but you don't, you know, if you have a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's super interesting. It's fascinating. It's really fascinating.
It really is. It's an amazing construction.
Unbelievable. Also, you said something in your book about, I mean, most of the people are talking about postnatal depression, but not about postnatal or postpartum anxiety. This has also to do with the brain shift, right?
Yeah, it's actually the amygdala that gets very active, and this evaluation of risk,
yeah,
that becomes so prominent that you think everything's dangerous around you, and that can of course create anxiety. So to some extent it's normal, but of course if it becomes a real problem for you and for longer, you should probably get some help. But it's normal to some extent.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, did we forget something really important?
Well, actually, one thing that I think is quite interesting is about the experience of giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always had, this book was a bit of a chance for me as well to get over my own, my own experience of giving birth to my firstborn, which was actually from the midwife's perspective, it was perfect birth. Everything went great and everything was so good. But I was completely traumatized by it because of the pain. It was just way beyond what I could actually bear.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt a bit, I think I had this perception that you should be able to do this naturally without painkillers and without epidurals. And I think that kind of destroyed my experience a lot, that I didn't do that. And also this perception that I had that the strong woman can do this on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a lot in my book, actually examined a lot why it hurts more for some women than for other, and it depends on so many factors. So I don't want to go through them here, but you know, there are actually reasons why it is easier for some women than for others.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, and pain can't, you know, you can't measure pain from the outside, but somehow there's still there are still reasons why it is this perception of the pain is different, or perception and perception, there are actually triggers of the pain that are different in each woman. And I think it's really important that you just don't compare yourself to other. And for me, it was a bit therapy to be able to say, okay, actually, you know, I was not like, I'm sorry, I get all this message. Yeah, it's not that I am weaker, or I can't, you know, control my pain. There are really physical mechanisms that changes this from one woman to the other.
That's super interesting. I mean, especially in, I would say, in the birth prep scene. I mean, there are so many women organizing those birth prep classes, and also many concepts around birth prep, and I guess most famous one is hypnobirthing, right? And they fill up their classes by advertising pain-free births, and this is something that annoys me a lot, because I think it's much more important to be prepared that there could be pain, and how to deal with pain, and how to just get along with it, and also like to explain what pain is and what the role of pain is, because also like you need some pain to release some hormones, right? Mm-hmm. During birth as well. So it's not, I mean, our bodies are not stupid. So yeah, I find it really important that we talk about pain during birth and do not, I don't know, tell the lie of pain-free births.
Yeah, I agree. And also somehow, evolutionary-wise, it can't be that bad that it hurts, because if it was that bad, that the pain didn't serve any purpose, it feels like this would have gone away.
Exactly.
I mean, you can speculate why. I don't think there are any theories that say, if you want to, I've researched this many times, why is the pain so hurtful? And it's more about the actual biological reasons, you know, when it goes through the birth canal and what it triggers. But no one actually dared to formulate the theory, like what purpose does it serve? But I'm somehow quite convinced that it serves a purpose, or evolution.
I mean,
would have gotten rid of it.
I know a midwife, and she wrote, I mean, the book is in German. She wrote the book Der Geburtsschmerz, like the pain of giving birth. And she's not a researcher, she's a midwife, but she's explaining in that book exactly what the purpose of the pain is, and why we should like, or how actually to work with it instead of against it. And I found it really interesting. It helped me quite a lot in my work. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Lisa, I wrote down some questions, but I think you already explained like everything I wanted to know from you. So do you think we covered everything you wanted to tell us?
Yes, I think we managed to go through yeah, go through all the topics I wanted to talk about as well.
It's super fascinating. I could listen to you for a much longer time. But actually, we want the people to buy your book, to know where to get it. Like, I mean, I got it as a present, so I didn't have to order it. Where can people find it?
So you can find it on all online platforms. So Amazon, or also books.ch, also Book Depository. Yes. I say everywhere where you normally buy books online, you can just order it. And maybe I should also just mention, so the book doesn't only cover pregnancy.
Yes.
It covers menstrual cycles, puberty, menopause. A little bit of everything, actually.
All the transitions, right? You somewhere there is a title like, I don't know, I loved it. I don't have it in mind anymore. Like, oh, here. A body in continuous transformation.
Yeah, that's a bit how I wanted to structure. So it's like the cyclic transformation, which is what we go through every month. And then it's like the initial transformation, which is the puberty, where the body changes so much. And then the huge transformation, pregnancy. And then the final transformation, menopause.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really, I can tell it's really interesting for every woman, probably, because it's also for moms of teenagers.
Yeah.
And I learned so much. So thank you so much for your work.
Ich hoffe, du fandest es auch so spannend wie ich. Und obwohl es da ein paar kleine Holperer und Stolperer vor allem auf meiner Seite gab, dass das für dich informativ war und du was mitnehmen konntest. Du machst mir einen riesigen Gefallen, wenn du mir eine Sternebewertung gibst. Das hilft einfach, dass mehr Leute auf den Podcast aufmerksam werden. Und wenn du jemanden kennst, den diese Themen auch interessieren würden, dann freue ich mich auch, wenn du einfach meinen Podcast weiterempfiehlst. Wenn du Fragen hast, Anregungen, dann melde dich gerne bei mir. Du findest Lisas Webseite, Link zu ihrem Buch, aber eben auch meine Kontaktdaten hier in den Shownotes. Ich wünsche dir einen ganz schönen verbleibenden Tag. Bis zum nächsten Mal.